Suzanne Northrup is one of the world's leading trans mediums. Her mission is to help and heal those who remain on this plane by communicating with loved ones that have passed. Her new program, Afterlife, is available on Hair TV, with the show's LGBT audience experiencing a seance. Hi, Suzanne.
How you doing, Charlotte?
Good. What is a trans medium?
Well, that's a good question, and it's interesting because with the show, they chose to say that it was a seance. It's really not a traditional seance, although seance basically comes from the English word means sitting, and generally a sitting implies a group of people with a medium, which is kind of what takes place. But I think when you're working with an audience, it's a little bit of a difference. So when I do what I call traditional seances, I tend to go into trance, which is kind of an altered sort of state between here and there. And when somebody does transmedium work, which by the way, a lot of people don't do transmedium work, is that you do go into a certain level of trance and you're connecting with what's called a control. And that control is in the non-physical realm. And in my particular case, her name is Elizabeth. Now, she will sometimes come through when I'm doing, you know, larger groups and the audience. Sometimes people will hear an inflection in my voice because she's Scottish. But ordinarily, she's much more prevalent in a smaller group, intimate situation than we had a little bit here on the TV program. Does that help?
A little bit, yeah.
It means a cross, and it means that you're going into a level of trance, which is a different state of a consciousness, you know, a little more on, you know, probably the beta level than, you know, than one might be when I'm actually giving messages, working like I did with the audience here.
Well, tell us about Afterlife on Hair TV.
It's the first show of its kind on Out TV and Hear TV, which I think is actually quite wonderful. And I was approached a couple of years ago, actually, by a Canadian company that we signed with, and then I ended up signing with another company, and they had asked me if I would be interested in doing something alternative, because they said that this was a community that had passing and losses like everybody else, but also there had been conflicts within the community in terms of parents and family things and family issues and things of that sort, and they thought that I might be a really good fit for this kind of a show. I think it's wonderful because the audience, it was obviously for the LGBT audience, but because it was, you know, some of it was filmed in Canada, and marriage is legal there, it was a mixed audience. And I kind of really liked it. I thought that was really cool because you have a mixed audience of people and from all kind of like walks of life. And there was like 18 to 21 to 22 people. It is the only show that I could tell you that I know of that is live to with the audience to tape. There's no edits, which is very rare, I know, for any media stuff with mediums. The whole idea of the show was obviously for me to, you know, do some little bit of teaching along the side, and I have a co-host, which is he's a fabulous guy, David Milburn, and then I give straight 21 minutes of messages to the group of people.
When did you realize you could communicate with people who have passed?
I had this when I was very young, and I think it's like anything. Anytime we have something that is natural from us from a very young age, I think you think of it very differently depending on your particular circumstances. If you have a bad experience, for example, if you came from a large, maybe religious family or a large intellectual family or, you know, something to that nature, or you show this ability in school and you freaked out the school nurse. If something like that has happened, it tends to have a very large deepening, not positive effect on children. If they've had it where they didn't have that or there was not really much energy given to it, I find that their response to it is much differently. Because I'll have a lot of people who, you know, that their children, they'll say to me, you know, my daughter's been doing this and my son's been doing this since my dad died. And dad was dead before they were born, but they seem to have these connections. And they'll ask me these questions about it. And I either share them, I go like, what's wonderful is obviously you have been receptive enough to this that the children don't take it to be a strange thing. Because, you see, I think it's a natural occurrence. If you think about it on the level that you have a child, and your mom or your dad passes, they're still going to be grandparents to that child. So why wouldn't they come and connect to that child? So the connection, I think, is a very natural thing. And I think unless people actually think about it, Charlotte, I don't think that they're aware that those people that have passed over, that their job is to connect with us here in the living world to help us in our process.
Tell us about your belief of a higher power.
My belief is really that we are really all part of what I call this greater consciousness, or greater universe for lack of a better word. I think we all have the ability to tap into it. I don't think it has, to be honest with you, anything to do with particular religious dogma. I think it's really much more of our, I would say, inner spiritual beliefs about that, making that connection. I think we all have access to what I call God consciousness. And I think that the difference that seems to be in the Western world as opposed to the Eastern world is often in the Western world you're supposed to necessarily go through a person, such as a police store or a clergy person, to make that connection. Where in the Eastern philosophy, you are able to, through processes of meditation and prayer, make that connection yourself. So when I talk about having that access point, I really believe it's something that we all have. And that's kind of the place that I go to make my connections.
You also believe that life is a series of relationships. And on your website, you say, and I quote, "Relationships problems should be worked out here because they do not go away, and it's a lot harder working them out later. Many of us do not work out problems for various reasons and are left with grief, guilt, or anger when other persons pass over." Could you chat about this?
Sure. This is the would've, could've, should've things. It's where we have, let's say, a difficult relationship with, our father. And you go through life, and you never work on that process, or you never work on trying to deal with it. Now, anytime we deal with something, it always takes two parties. We know that. But let's just say that the one party is not willing, and you haven't gone through the process of really trying to deal with some of that healing or some of that grief or some of those things that happen. What happens is that when we don't deal with it while the people are physically here living, when they pass over, what happens, it goes into a whole other level of escalation. Partly is because we don't have the vehicle or the person to deal with it. That's number one. And then what happens is it gets turned to a whole thing of like, well, I shouldn't feel this way because they're dead, and now they're not living, so now I can't deal with them. So what happens is it creates a tremendous amount of unresolvement for many people. And I find people literally that are still holding on to all that grief, and they wish they could have said it and they didn't say it and deal with those things 20 years, 30 years after that person's passed. That's a lot of intense grief and unresolvement to hold on to. And it is very common, let me tell you. So what I like to sort of share with people is that even if it's a difficult situation, say it now, because tomorrow, boom, your life may change in a heartbeat. I tell the story because it's one that I deal with, obviously, all the time within my work, but I like to always use this as kind of like a perfect example. I live in New York, and I actually was here for 9/11. And I happened to have been, interesting enough, I had events in Tucson about, it's like 2 or 3 weeks afterwards, and I had just come off from book tour, and so needless to say, the people, they wanted to go ahead, and even if there wasn't going to be the same attendance, they just said, you know what, who will show up is supposed to be there, and what we'll do is we'll invite the staff because we think it's still a wonderful thing to follow through with this. So anyway, I was in the airport. And, you know, needless to say, it was kind of like a ghost town. And what happened within the period of time right after that was, after being in the airport for so much, and then right after 9/11, there was this wonderful thing that happened. I would walk through the airport, and I would hear people on their cell phones telling people that they loved them. And it was like it took some tragedy of this for me to actually experience that. With Charlotte, it was extremely significant. I said, wow, definitely it takes something like that for people to realize at a moment our life can change. and for people that have, you know, experienced that, and, you know, and losses, and all losses to many people, whether they're illness or quick passings or however they are, it's really in, to that individual of their own particular kind of a grief process. So if you can resolve an issue the best that you possibly can, always try to do it while the people are here. You will thank me later on, I say, because you won't have to worry about that I didn't tell that person that I loved them. I remember when there was the abductions of this little girl that was in Florida several years back, and I remember one of the things that the father said on the television is, he said, every day my daughter left, I told her I loved her. So in her consciousness and her being, regardless of what happened to her, she will have that memory of her father always saying that. And he had the memory of saying, she always knew when she walked out that door, I told her I loved her. So he was very clear about feeling that, you know, as devastated as he was from his loss, he didn't have an unresolvement. So that's kind of what I mean.
My mother passed on September 8th. So my family was, you know, really into their whole grief thing before September 11th.
Wow.
And a friend of mine said that, you know, my mother was probably up there just going, this way,
right.
This way.
But I bet she was.
Well, my niece was also in the last plane that was going over the World Trade Center, where they said to her, if you look to the right of the airplane, you'll see the World Trade Center has been hit by a plane and is on fire.
Yes. Now, let me tell you this. This is what I'm going to tell you connected to that. Bet me on this one. Of course, you can't prove it to me, but bet me on this one, that your mom, who was already over there, was making sure that your niece was okay. I guarantee she had taken the right plane and not the wrong plane, and I bet your mom had something to do with it.
Wow.
I tell you right now. She says that's how they operate. What they do is that they'll pull strings. I mean, what are the odds, Charlotte, that it was that plane and not the other one?
Right. And she was coming from Baltimore.
Right.
She was coming to my, you know, to, from my mother's funeral.
So I rest my case.
Yeah. But my sister called me. She was just totally freaked out. She said, you know, we just lost Mom. You know, I just, you know, because at that point they didn't know what planes had hit the World Trade Center. And I said, no, I don't think so. I think Kara's safe. And then she was in the last plane that was that landed in Boston.
Yeah. And interesting enough, you know, I talk about Boston, but we all know about the plane, you know, in Washington, Baltimore area. So there's a lot of coincidences. Of course, I believe that the word coincidences is God's way of remaining anonymous. So I think your mama was definitely busy.
When you receive your information from DPs,
mm-hmm.
How does that come to you?
It comes in a variety of ways. It really depends on the circumstances or, you know, who I'm receiving the information with. But my mind, and actually all our minds, to be honest with you, work very much like radio sets. So it's kind of like the frequency that I'm particularly tuning into at that specific time. So a lot of the ways that I receive information, particularly, like I said, in the setting for the afterlife, was, I don't know if you've seen any of the clips or you've seen any of the shows, but it's sort of on a circular setting. And like I said, there was like 18 to like 21, 22 people there. And what would happen is that I would be pulled to one side of the room. While I'm being pulled to the side of the room, what often happens to me, I hear names. And when I hear the names, it's connected to somebody on that side of the room. And when I hear the name, it's either the name of the person who's passed over, or it's a living person that's connected to the person that's passed over that's identifying. So they're identifying by two different ways. As I'm pulled to them, and then more information will come through. Now, other than names, sometimes I'll get what I call like parallel relationships. Like a brother doesn't have to literally be a brother. It could be a best friend. It could be a brother-in-law. It could be a male cousin. I would feel it like that kind of relationship. Mothers don't have to have had us. They could have that kind of relationship. So it's a combination of names and feeling and sounds. I will feel something, for example, in my chest. A heart attack feels differently than somebody that's got lung stuff, that somebody may have cancer in the breast. They're all in the same area, but they have a little bit of a different feeling to me. And this is just only, obviously, from doing the work as many years as I've done it. It's kind of a natural process for me, but it's really very different depending on who I'm actually working with.
Are you getting any messages from DPs around May?
Well, I'll tell you something. I really think that message that I got from your mom to your niece, which would have been her granddaughter, which I believe she was very connected to, was pretty significant.
You're right.
It was very, very strong. I mean, I believe they had a very strong bond.
They did.
Yes. Now, are you one of three, or is she one of three? Who's one of three?
I am.
Yeah, that's the way she lets me know she's coming through. Yeah, and it's interesting. I don't know if you're the oldest or you have that role in the family, but she says you're kind of the glue person. You know what a glue person is?
No.
A glue person tends to be the one that keeps things together in the family.
Yeah, I did that. I'm the middle child.
Yeah, and it's interesting because that often falls to that placement in the family position. And so your mother would know that to be about you. And my guessing is the family would also continue to put you in that position as well.
Interesting.
Yeah. Now, your first or middle name is honored from one of the side of the family of your mom.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Because that person's passed with your mom, they're telling me.
Wow. Yeah, Mom, I'm named after my grandfather, Charles.
I was going to say, it sounds like Charles, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So he's with your mama. And he was there when she went over. And he was a pipe or a cigarette smoker.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I smelled tobacco.
Yeah, that's what killed him.
Yeah.
My mother said that he didn't die of cancer, he died of camels.
Yeah, well, she's right. She kept her humor, too.
Great. Well, thank you. Thank you for that one.
You're very welcome.
Could you share some other of your favorite seance experiences?
Oh, God, there's like so many of them. One was these two women that were together, and apparently the one woman's grandmother came through, so she was extremely connected to. But the grandmother just kept saying something in the effect about somebody by the name of Dolores or Dorothy or something like that, that there was a lot of upset in the family. And, you know, she kept looking at me like she wasn't quite sure what I was saying, but the grandmother was pretty insistent about it. And one thing I've learned is that, you know, when the dead people are insistent, I just have to keep passing on. They go like, I'm sorry, she won't let it go, I don't know what to tell you. Anyway, what came out of that was that her brother's new wife, I guess her name was Dorothy or Dolores or something like that, she was living, but she was a born again. And so she was very disapproving of this woman and her relationship with this other woman. Now, what came out of that very strongly was the grandmother, who was the center of the family, and the family were very, very connected family. And all of a sudden, this was the first time they had this real distancing, you know, clash in the family, and it was pretty upsetting. And it was visibly upsetting to this woman. So it was very clear that the grandmother came through and talked about that, literally that discord, which, if she would have been here, would have been extremely upset about. So it came through very strongly. I said, well, then, you know, you need to have this woman watch the show, because she'll see that you know, this is about love, and she you know, she's got to, like, take a chill pill. And she goes, oh, no, this woman would never watch this show. And I says, don't kid yourself. You'd be very surprised. People, they may live one life, and then they do things other. So that came out real strong in the show. And then there was another one where there's a young man that I guess his ex-partner, mom passed, who came through. And while she was alive, she had, you know, difficulty with her relationship. But right before she died, she told him how she did love him. So he could at least feel that. And that came through in the session pretty strong. So those were kind of like, you know, just some of the nice things that I thought that really, you know, came out of the show.
Do you have a favorite quote or mantra to get you through times like these?
First of all, I have a tremendous, tremendous faith, and I believe that fear is extremely dangerous, and I really mean that on all levels. It's a very dangerous emotion. It will paralyze you. It will take your power away. It will put you in angst. It'll give you sleepless nights. There's really, the only time that fear becomes a positive element is when it makes us escape a situation of danger or something to that effect, which it turns into, you know, a need to survive. That's where it has its place. But when it has its place where it overrules the sense of your feeling centered and your well-being, then that's where it becomes, I believe, dangerous. So I always sort of say to people, you know, particularly during this time, because I'm asked these questions a lot, listen, you have no control of what's going on in the outer world. You don't. You have no control of all the insanity, as I would say, that's going out there. But what you do have control of is how you deal with it, how you choose to feed the fire or the lion, as they say, or you choose not to. That's something that you have within your control that you can do. And the more that you work with that, it will not only help you through this, but you'll have the faith to, like, just know at a moment's notice, you never know when that energy is going to change or when it's going to change for something coming to your life. So I would say that's a big one for me. I have a big, a very, very big faith base.
My aunt always used to say to me that nothing's so bad that can't get worse. Mm-hmm. And we always spend all our time worrying about things that never happen.
That's exactly right. She was a very smart woman.
Yeah, she was. And thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Take care, Suzanne, and good luck with the new show.
Thanks again.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.